Chris, tell anyone what you would say if someone said, I know I need a coach one day, but not now because blah, blah, blah.
I actually believe all leaders, regardless of the size of your organization, needs mentors, needs a network of advisors, whether it's a paid coach or someone who's not paid, but they're willing to give you time. You know, you need people who have come before you.
You're listening to the Nick Vujicic Podcast, the place where you will be coached in how to turn your obstacles into opportunities, inspired to dream big, and challenged to never give up. Now here's our host, New York Times best-selling author, speaker, and entrepreneur, Nick Vujicic.
Hi everyone, it's Nick Vujicic and welcome back to the Nick Vujicic Podcast. This Monday episode, I have the privilege of talking to my life coach that helps me in the leadership aspects of my life, Christine Grimm from Aria Consulting. We have started our Wednesday Leadership Now series and I thought it would be awesome to share with all of you how we met, how our friendship blossomed, and you get to know Chris's story because I really believe someone out there is going to be inspired and encouraged. I am blown away, Chris, at where you are in your life, your heart, the responsibility that you have, knowing that you influence leaders who have sometimes tens of thousands of employees. And how you help align a CEO's mind not only affects the company and the trajectory of a company, but obviously every company is built with people and people affect others, especially families. And you have changed my life. You are one of the greatest blessings of my life in the last 6 years. And when you said, hey, I'd be willing to do a podcast with you, my jaw was on the floor. I'm like, Chris wants to do something with me like this? That would be cool. And you're like, yeah, if we could just help people. And I love your heart, Chris. Thank you so much for coming on the Monday episodes of the Nick Vujicic Podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun. We've done more together in the last 3 months, hashtag thanks Corona, than 6 years. Great.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
I'm excited because we can talk about something other than leadership. I mean, it's going to be a part of what we talk about because we can't not talk about that with me.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think it's important to start, I guess, at the very beginning, where you want to start. Obviously, your dad and his role in your life of moving you guys. How many times did you already move by a certain age?
A lot. So my dad, wait, let's come back so they hear hold the whole story. So my parents had me when they were very, very young, getting out of high school. I dare say that was not planned, but we don't have to go there. Thanks, Mom and Dad, for keeping me. It wasn't easy, by the way. It completely changed the trajectory of their life. Yeah. So I'm thankful that they did that. And my dad, to get them out of a situation that could have been super bad, right? They were poor and young and my dad couldn't go to college the way he had planned because now he had a wife and a child. So he worked a lot and it was not working. They were suffering. And even though their family could help them a little bit, they had a lot of hardship. And so my dad went down to the Marine Corps recruiters and completely changed our life. So my father became a military officer in the Marines. He was a pilot for a while until he had a medical problem with his ear. We moved, I think the number is 15 times before I was 13.
Wow.
But totaling, my mom will tell you that anybody who's in the military knows this. When the military moves you, you get these stickers on the back of your furniture because they number the items before they pack them and put them. And so on the back of some of my mom's furniture, some of which I've inherited over time, there are these stickers. And so my mom would say, I think that my parents are on their 25th move right now. I think they moved 23 times before I technically left home. It's a lot.
You got to see a lot of the world. I'm just so curious, what was the world of Christine Grimm at the time, and what made you to come to maybe this thought and idea of well, let's just say, what were your thoughts in the future and career of your life? What did you know you for sure wanted, and what did you know for sure that you did not want in your life?
It's a great question. I think that at a very young age, first of all, I was born to be like a teacher or something, because my brother would share with you that at a very young age, I used to ask my teachers, I'm 52, so people who have been around, they'll know what I'm talking about. Elementary school and middle school, you know, the teachers used to give you a lot of handouts that they would do in a copy machine or a mimeograph machine. There were all these old machines before there were computers. I would ask the teacher for the extra worksheets, and I would bring them home, and I would make my younger brother do school. Little piles of worksheets. My brother's 3 years younger than me, so everybody can understand that literally I was just like this little teacher person. He had no idea what he was writing, but he always did what I asked him to do most of the time. He was a good student. In his own way. And yeah, I would have pencils and pens. And so at a very young age, teacher was in my head that's what I wanted to be. And the other thing, you'll laugh at this, Nick, because you know it's completely true. I, at a very young age, thought all the adults that I knew were pretty much the dumbest people on earth. Good at, like, this is my superpower. And just like the X-Men, like I was I was out of control for a long time. So at a very young age, I would tell my teachers what to do. I would go tell the principal. I actually had a teacher fired. I don't know that I knew that was going to happen when I went to the principal, but anyway, some stuff was happening and yeah.
Oh my gosh. I've never known. What?
Yeah. I think it was like third or fourth grade. There was some stuff. The teacher actually came from Australia, and the teacher used corporal punishment. The teacher was hitting people in the classroom.
Oh my gosh.
And I went home, told my parents one day. My mom's like, no, you know, not listening to me, whatever. And the next day I was like, I'm over this. So I went right to the principal. And so that's I
was. That's an awesome story.
I've always told people, I've always identified problems. I've always been a teacher, so a very natural.
Perfect.
Yeah, right. So now I have a consulting firm. I've had it for 23 years, and we coach executives. And so, yeah, I'm doing the same thing I was doing when I was 5. I give people worksheets and lessons just in a different format and tell people what to do.
Awesome. Awesome. And what did you study then in college or university?
Right. So I went to Pepperdine undergraduate, and like many undergraduate, I have to tell you, I was a little aimless at first, which some people don't believe about me because I'm not very aimless now. I wasn't sure what I wanted to be, so I started with a British literature major and very quickly realized that that was a lot to read. And so my freshman year, I was like, whoa, this is not the experience I want to have. So for all of you out there who are just going to college, it's okay to change your mind. Just make sure you proactively communicate with your parents about that. So I shifted a little bit. I ended up getting a degree in the social sciences, which allowed me to study sociology and political science and dabble a little bit in other liberal arts classes that were available at Pepperdine, which I loved, philosophy, etc. I also got a teaching credential for the state of California because a mentor of mine suggested that I do that, just try teaching. And so then I taught middle school in Southern California for a few years. Public education was difficult for me, Nick. Public education, I taught both in an affluent part of the city and then a very, very poor, predominantly Hispanic part of Los Angeles with a lot of migrant families, a lot of families where you know, the kids were going home and their parents didn't speak English, or they didn't speak English well enough to help them with homework, or those kind of things. So I had kind of both experiences. Neither were that satisfying to me. I just felt like public education was a place where I couldn't make the kind of impact I wanted. And so I took a break from that and ended up never going back to the classroom. I ended up doing some consulting, kind of toe dipping there. And then I got a corporate job and immediately started to realize that what I loved the most was some combination of adult learning, right? Really helping people. For some reason, I don't know when I realized this, but somewhere along the line in my first, I think, corporate job, I started to realize that I could see people's potential even when they couldn't. Right? Like they could be totally messing up or a total jerk or something, and I could see a different version of them. And Right. And then I think I found my true love, right? Like I think that's why we're in the business that we're in today, because I adore that. I love getting the phone call and meeting with someone and sitting talking with that leader and hearing them or their people sometimes tell me stories that are terrible. But knowing, like in my heart knowing, oh, we can do this. Like, we got this, right? It's going to take a little work, but yeah. So,
When you first said that you went into consulting, like what did you consult? Like, what was your first couple, you know, what was the first handful of consulting gigs that you had or challenges that you were given?
Well, interestingly enough, my first consulting gig that had nothing to do really, but everything to do with it, of what I do today. When I left the classroom, a principal that I was working for, who was a fantastic principal, by the way, I worked for some really great principals, even though I didn't love public education. The principal said, no, don't leave education. Just take some time off from the classroom, thinking I was gonna come back, and allowed me to write a federal grant for the school. Mm. So I basically moved into a consultative role, went through a whole bunch of education on how to write a grant, a big grant. LA Unified is a gigantic school district, as you probably know, and it has a whole bunch of very diverse problems and issues depending on where in the city. So that was an amazing 6 or 7 months. Honestly, I learned about being consultative, but I also learned about project management and grant writing. I learned about how federal money works in school districts and all of that. So that was my first time. My second time, which you're probably more interested in, was, well, it was the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, the first official one, right? When I left so fast forward a number of years after I've worked corporate and worked for a company that was bought by a private equity firm. So I started to understand like how adults work in business and how teams work and how they don't work and why they don't work and what happens to leaders when they're a good person, but the pressures of business are on them. And so I did that for a while, and then I met the daughter of the founder of Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, Annie Hyman. Her dad was Herbert Hyman, and he started the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf a number of years ago here in Los Angeles. Lovely people. Annie and I were around the same age. She had become CEO because her father started having health problems, and she was one of the kids who decided to come into the business. And she asked if I would come and help them with their leadership development. So my first real consulting project was that. It was amazing. I helped them build their leadership development for all their stores. They had not had a manual with everything from the recipes to how to run the store. So that was lovely. And then I also helped them take their stores into Asia. So the current owners, actually there's new owners in the Philippines, but in between the Hymans was a group out of Singapore, also an amazing family. And so I got to interface with them and help them translate what we were doing in the US for the opening of the stores in Asia. So that was the beginning of my consulting career. And I never looked back, to be honest.
That's amazing. How many years ago was that approximately?
That was about 20 something years ago. So I would say I draw the line. Coffee Bean started in 1997. So to me, that's kind of the beginning of Aria Consulting, even though people might know this, people might not, that it took me about 5 years to do this on purpose. People laugh at me, and here I am, Nick, telling people like you how to do their business better. And for 5 years, I had so much work and projects and things that I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about my own business as a business. I just went from like project to project, and we had some fantastic projects, global projects. I worked a little while in Heidelberg, Germany. I did some projects for, you know, a whole bunch of companies here in Los Angeles. I was learning. I was, you know, learning to partner with other organizations, and really just, if you think about before kids and after kids, you know, my time before my kids were born, I worked like a dog. Bill had his business, so he was also working a lot. And that afforded me the opportunity to take projects that I could travel a lot and learn about global teams. Like I said to you, one thing that is really a core piece of what I do, I think, is, you know, because I think I've even done it with you, right? Like sitting with a leader or a team and thinking about, like, what have you just committed yourself to? Like, what have you committed to your board? What have you told your customers? What are you telling yourselves? And what does that mean in real life? Because oftentimes, you know, a team or a leader, you're a visionary leader, right? You've got big dreams and you're putting them out there. But the execution of that, like how it's actually going to work in real life, is not always like a part of the vision, right? Like the vision.
Right.
But that doesn't always set a clear path to making that happen.
So cool. So, you got the bug, if you will, biting you around 23 years ago. What is so incredible to me is my own personal relationship with you, our friendship. Anytime you tell me something of wisdom, or you point out an observation, it seems as though it's the most simplistic concept that you must see again and again and again and again in all the corporations. Do you ever get tired of what you do, where these leaders seem to be having the same issue again and again? Or is it how do you keep yourself from becoming callous to what you're doing? Because unless you feel like not every client's very different, I mean, the issues might be the same, but the company is different. The situation is different. I mean, because you have a lot of clients and very high level clients, clientele. I'm just curious, like the simplistic things that you've pointed out, my question of, is it just repetitive to each of it, or is it actually still exciting to you?
You know, honestly, probably a little bit of both. I definitely have had moments, Nick, where I'm like, really? I'd be lying if I didn't say that. But I would say, first of all, I was born to do this. Like, I was born to do this. Like, there's no question. And so when I catch myself getting maybe a little jaded or feeling cranky or whatever that is, because it happens, I think I've learned by now that that's about me. That's not about everybody else. It's maybe that I need a rest, or I need to rethink the tools that we're using or the process. Maybe I'm not taking care of myself well enough. You know, I would say to you, though, you asked something that's really important. I'm in the human business, right? So every situation, even though the business problems might look and feel the same, they are different people, right? Everybody I coach is a very different human. And so even though there's commonalities, because I agree with you, I think oftentimes, I try not to do this, but it happens, right? The lessons tend to come out and they might sound like the same themes that I use with everybody. I hate that. I don't want that to be the case because I really am coaching you.
Right.
And it, to me, it feels different. It doesn't always feel the same. Like I said, I do have moments where sometimes I might feel like, oh, you know, am I doing the same thing? But it's not the same, right? You and your team are not the same as someone I coach at T-Mobile who has a team, even though the issues that the team faces might be the same.
Yeah.
Like team conflict, low trust, business problems, we made the bad decision, our strategy's not good, you know, we have a new competitor, they're kicking our butt, like whatever. Those things could be the same, but not the solution necessarily.
Got it. And have you ever had a problem with a client that you told them what to do and they didn't listen to you, and so you're like, I told you so, and then you actually quit on them? Like, has that happened a lot? Not that you quit on them, you're like, I'm done with you.
Yeah, I've fired some clients in 23 years for sure. I was gonna say, I've ever had a client who didn't listen. I think you maybe once or twice.
Love it. I'm the Serbian bullhead, man. It's bad.
Sure, it happens. Look, like I'm saying, you know, I'm dealing with people.
Right.
And I also respect, by the way, that I don't know everything. So, you know, one of the things that I actually believe makes us good at what we do, not just me, but my team, is, you know, oftentimes I'll say to my team members, when you get to the moment where you think you know more than them, you should stop. Because that's not my job. My job isn't to be the all-knowing Wizard of Oz. Like, that's not what a consultant or a coach should be. Now, I realize, by the way, there are some people who are subject matter experts. They truly are like an expert in something, and they're going to come, they're going to tell you all that stuff, and then they're going to leave. That's not us, right? I'm here for the long haul. I'm here for the transformative process. I want you and your team to be awesome. I want you to be the best person. And like I said to you, I have this weird gift, right, where I'm with people and I can see through the bad and the weakness, and like, I can see who you are when you're at your best. And so but it doesn't mean that my vision is your vision, right? Like my job is to nurture and give you the tools and you the new thinking so that you figure out the best version of you and embrace that and live that, right? So, so
that's,
yeah,
good.
I was trying to remember anybody who I fired. There have been some in 23 years, but not that many, probably a handful.
So, no, I love that I could ask you such a question that I know you were not expecting. I know a lot of people who are listening or watching who are thinking, well, I've got such a small company. I've got such a small team. Explain to people that I'm not going to assume, but I mean, I can secretly assume what the answer is, but tell anyone what you would say if someone said, I know I need a coach one day, but not now because blah, blah, blah.
Sure. Well, I would say there's tons of coaches, and I would forget coach for a second. If you're a leader, a small business owner, I don't care if you have one employee or if you have, you know, 100,000. If you need help, either with your own development or with your team or with your business, there's someone who is the right person who can help you, right? So I wouldn't assume that. And I would say to people who have really small businesses, local small businesses, the Chamber of Commerce, the county, your municipality. I know this is in and outside of the US. In fact, someone from Africa emailed me the other day, probably because of your podcast, to be honest. I haven't explored it yet, where she came from. But there are leadership academies that are built for small business. And like I said, usually that comes out of some kind of governmental agency around the world. I know they exist. And so I would say, you know, it doesn't have to be Chris Grimm coach. Coaches come in different packages. And the other thing I would say is I actually believe all leaders, regardless of the size of your organization, needs mentors, needs a network of advisors, whether it's a paid coach or someone who's not paid, but they're willing to give you time. You know, you need people who have come before you, you know, to help. I think someone wakes up and they think they need no help. I need no help. That's when you need help.
I love it. What's your prediction? Is there going to be a revolution or an evolution of coaching and team building in now this, it's almost like a BC AD. It's like PC, pre-COVID. What's that? Post-COVID? What do you think is going to happen in the corporate world when it comes to coaching and leadership and the team building aspect now that it's all quite decentralized and virtual?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So even before 2020, last year, I was on a panel talking about the disruption of a disruptors panel and talking about the future of coaching. So I think now it's accelerated, to be honest. Everything we talked about last year is happening faster than some people planned. I think a few things. First of all, coaching and consulting was born in corporate. That's who had the money. That's who had the motivation to pay money to help people develop, to help teams, etc. I believe we are living now in a time where individuals who are motivated and have some resources are investing in themselves. I'm seeing that with millennials and the younger groups, but now since COVID and since our remote work situation, we have multiple websites. We have a corporate, but we have Aria Coach, which is for individual people who want to buy their own. And of course we have avi.me, which is for women, focused on women's kinds of issues and retreats and things. So I would say to you, one trend is that more and more people are taking responsibility for their own development and not waiting for their business, their company, somebody else to pay for it, someone else to tell them what it is that they need to do, seeking their own assessments, etc. Like I said, we knew that was going to happen. It was slowly but surely happening with the internet. But it's really happening now, like pedal to the metal. I would say the second thing that I'm seeing is at one point in time, Nick, I think we talked a little bit about this on our podcast about global teams. You know, at one point in time, having a dispersed team and having people work from home or be remote was like this big inconvenience, right? Yeah. Leaders, gosh, are you kidding me? Right. So now.
And a trust issue.
Oh my gosh. It was a trust issue. It was a trust issue.
Everything.
I can't trust people to work at home. They won't do work.
They can't take the records. They're going to use the records for their own blah, blah, right? They can't take the computers home. They can't. Now it's like, whoa, baby.
2020 came in like a genie. Bling. Totally. So I think another trend is that now we're getting used to people not being in the same room, in the same building together. That has a big impact on our business and people like me because we spent 23 years, to be honest with you, getting on a plane, waiting for corporate contracts, right? Big contracts, multi-year contracts, big budgets when we could get them, but big coaching engagements anchored into a corporate culture. And we would fly there and I would coach people and then I would leave. I think that's going to be less and less. I just don't, I don't believe that. I mean, I think that's still going to exist, but I don't think it's going to be the primary part of our business moving forward.
What do you think virtual reality, Chris, is going to play in this role over the next 5 to 7 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's not just VR, right? I think that augmented reality, virtual reality, our artificial intelligence, we're seeing it. We've been seeing it in the learning space for a bit. It's been around. Learning simulations and gamification have been in the learning conversation now for a few years, more than a few. But not everybody had the budget to do it. It takes a lot to kind of take your learning content and take it there. I think we are going to see more and more of that. I just think it's the right thing. The other thing that I think is going to emerge, and we're just seeing it a little bit now, but really exploring new ways of interfacing with each other collaboratively in remote environments. Like I was just on with a client on Friday, and we were talking about, now that we've done this for 4 months and they're almost done with their strategic plan, that was incredible to do a whole strategic plan from start to finish in Zoom, WebEx, Microsoft Teams. There were a lot of really great things. There were a lot of moments in time, though, where everybody who was participating was like, oh, I wish we were in a room together. I miss the people connection. Like, I wish we could have lunch together. I wish those things. So I think this is going to evolve very quickly. And we are going to find ways. So whether it has virtual reality in it or whether, you know what I'm saying? I think we're going to have like a whole mashing of things that exist in gaming. Frankly, I watch the teens. They've been using all of these things for a very long time. I do think that's going to become a part of our meeting and conference environment. And then I think that as that technology becomes more accessible, it'll just be in Zoom, right? Like it will just have the ability to be in a virtual room together, and we'll put on our little glasses and we'll be there, which will be really weird, but probably pretty awesome.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's go back to the philosophical compass of balance for Christine Grimm. I have to say, because I just can't get this picture out of my head. How young were your children when they were arguing and you sat them down and you said, that's it, you're going to do a DISC assessment. I want to know your personality. And you bring all these tools that you've been saying at work. How do you make that border of workplace and not use that process that's not so work related and using verbiage, which is what you know it is, the tools that you're using, whether you're quoting it or not with your kids? What did you have to do to make yourself disciplined to make sure that you're, Chris the mum, and not Christine, the coach of Aria in the house?
Well, it's such a great question. I think their answer would be different than mine. So remember, I had my business, my kids were in the womb, right? So they've been listening to me talk on the phone to people and do this forever. Like, I'm sure that's why my son has anxiety. I don't know that I ever tried to be two different people. I think I just tried to be an integrated person. I've worked at home a great deal when I'm not traveling, so I've never tried to hide anything from my children. Both of them have traveled with me for business. My son enjoyed having like a little mini office at T-Mobile when I would go there. The admins, who are amazing, the executive assistants would bring them like soda. do you know what I mean? Like my kids have known our life. Bill also had a printing company for 30 years. So two entrepreneur parents, there wasn't the separation, right? Of like mom goes to work. I mean, your kids will have the same, right? Like you're working at home, hearing you, and now everybody's having that. So I don't know that I did that, but I understand the question you're asking. And I think actually for Bill, it's been my adult friends and my husband, where it's probably where I had to be super conscious that I wasn't his coach, right? That I could listen to him talk about business problems and I had to keep my wife hat on, not always put my coach hat on. So you'll laugh, but sometimes that's what I would say. I'd be like, hey, time out. Like the coach in me can't wait anymore. Can I put my coach hat on just for 5 minutes? Because it's killing me. and with the kids asked about DISC, I have to say, I think that the first time my kids had DISC probably was about 4 years ago. Billy had had anxiety and depression problems and had gone through a whole bunch of assessments. And so Bill and Gabby, that's my husband and my daughter, they agreed. And we did a family DISC. We're in all four quadrants, not a surprise. Training in our living room with a flip chart. No joke. And they liked it. Or at least they told me they liked it.
Yep, yep. Well, I could just imagine, you know, she's only seven. And you're like, that's it. Stop right now. Time out.
There was
that. That's great. That's recent. That's very cool. What do you imagine moving forward with? This is my last question before we're trying to wrap this up. But just the Gen Z, right? Mm-hmm. From a moral teaching values based thing. I mean, we're 2020, right? And I just was talking with Mark Friedler on the previous Monday episode about financial literacy, right? Like we should have been teaching children financial literacy, and it's 2020, and we finally got it mandatory in some states to bring in social emotional learning curriculum that help people be self-aware and aware of the society around them. On the leadership thing, obviously there are programs out there. I'm not saying that there aren't. But how important is it that every parent sits down and does what you do with CEOs, where it's almost like, hey, wait. Like, you know, helping start conversations in our own sphere of influence, even though we're not a coach, whether it be a peer-to-peer, whether it would be parent to child, or encouraging somebody. How important is it that we all kind of have a timeout and say, oh my goodness, what do I actually believe? What am I actually saying? What do I actually want? It's almost like a wake-up call to reality. And sometimes, I'm going to say it from my point of view, most of the times, it comes through a person, whether it's a motivational speaker, whether it's through a pastor, whether it's through whatever. How important is it that we ourselves allow ourselves to be in check and then also be that voice for someone else in our relationships? Because we get so caught up in our busyness of life and achieving and routine, and the pace of life gets faster and faster. I would like us to come back to the grounding issue for ourselves and our community. How important is it that we, like never before, as well that it's 2020, know the truth of what we do believe, being aware of the stories that are being told to us and the stories we tell ourselves, the importance of psychology, the philosophies that we hold on to, all this stuff. It's a very complicated way of me saying what I'm trying to say, but because you know exactly what I'm trying to say, I'll let you reword it.
Mm. Wow. Well, look, I'm going to say something that people aren't going to like to hear, but I think it has to be said, which is, I think God is kind of done with us ignoring that we're a whole being. What I mean by that is, you know, up until recently, first of all, we were completely distracted, all of us. COVID came and he's had to stay home. Everything's closed. Our distractions have been limited. I know people who are really good at continuing them. You know who you are. But I do think that at this moment, you know, us being kind of grounded is literally like a moment in time where the universe, God, whatever you think, I'm going to say God because that's what I think and believe, is saying, hey, time out, everybody. Like, gone are the days where spiritual, physical, mental, emotional are separate things. I was looking at some of our material, Nick. We have a tool that Larry Wilson gave to us many years ago. You know Larry. Called the Triangle of Coherence. He didn't make it up. It's been around for a long time. And the Triangle of Coherence is you creating coherence with all parts of yourself. And I kind of cracked up at that because I was like, oh, right. We have to explain that to people. What I'm really saying to you is I think it's time for us, whether you have kids or not. If you have kids, then you have double duty, right? So first with yourself, start to understand that those pieces of you are not separate. They have been connected the whole time, even though we lived our lives as if they were not. Mm. Right? Most of us, like, spiritual was put in this little box over here. I go to church on Sunday. I think this, and I know not everybody, by the way, so please don't be offended. Everybody has their own version of this story. But I would think if you stand back and just think about what is average, right? People, they went to work, and that was a place where our emotions and our family and everything were kind of kept separate. We put on a mask or a hat and our uniform, and we went to work, and we were work me. Right? And at home, I was home me. And then on Sunday, I was church me. And then I went to the gym and I worked out, and that was that me, right? Check, check, check.
Sexy there. Me.
Yes, that one too. Check. Right? So I think that's over.
Right.
I think it's time for everybody to be whole and actually figure out, like, to your point, like, Your core values are a part of you. They've always been, even though you were trying to, like, not have them, or people were, like, hiding them in certain parts of their life. Oh, I can't be like that over here. And that's, it's over. So I think whole learning, like, whole experience, like, accepting, by the way, I think this is not just because of, like, we have to stay home at COVID. I honestly believe 2020 was the time planned. I believe that. I think that it's been planned for a very long time for us to have an awakening, that awakening, regardless of what you believe, what you read on the internet, is this, like, wake up. You're a whole being. Your values are with you all day, every day. Are you living them consistently in all parts of your life? And to your point, like, do you know when you're, like, spending time with your children that, you know, if you're not congruent in what you say and the vibration that you're giving them at that moment, kids know, right? That's why so many kids are confused. Like, what the heck's wrong with the adults here? So yeah, everything's gotta be, we gotta redo it all. We gotta redo it all. School has to be different. Our social lives have to emerge differently. I think that the less distractions, the better. So even though I do want life to come back and economically I would like our businesses to open, at the same time, I'm like, I hope when they reopen that we really do it in a conscious way.
Right.
Consider whole people.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That's amazing. Well said. I ask my guests, Chris, three questions at the end, but before I go there, if people want to know more about Aria, where can they find out more about you and get some even free resources from Aria Consulting?
Sure. We have three different websites. You can probably find me anywhere, LinkedIn or Forbes.com. That's easy. Christine Grimm. But we have ariacx.com. It'll all be in the links. That's for corporate work. If you are an individual looking for coaching, we have ariacoach.com. We work globally. We've got coaches. They're amazing. and assessment tools in multiple languages. You don't have to worry about just being here in the US. And we have avvi.me, A-V-V-I.me. That's for women's programs. We may expand, by the way, no discrimination. So if you're not a woman and you're interested in our programs, just sign up. But we're designing based on the needs that we were told that were not being met around women. So I'm easy to find.
That's awesome. Good. Congratulations. And then for those of you watching and listening, Chris and I are dreaming about doing some virtual roundtables with you who might be interested. So stay tuned for any updates on that. And make sure that if you haven't passed on the Leadership Now series content and it's been refreshing or encouraging to you, make sure you pass it on because you just don't know who needs some encouragement. Chris, what an incredible just time just to unpackage where you came from, your passion, your dream, your hopes for the world from corporate level to us individually, to really understand that when you boil it down to the one thing, it's being the whole being, that you can't separate the spiritual from the mental to the emotional to the psychological. It's the holistic being that we need to understand and really face the fact of what do we really believe? And was it enough to get us through this crisis, which is really interesting, and be okay to look for the truth and find that strength, you will. Chris, this was fun, so much fun. My first of three questions at the end, what are you, oh, and by the way, Chris, you're the best coach in the world. You've been coaching me for 5-6 years, and I really appreciate everything you've done for me and the patience that you've had with me. You've really helped us out a lot. So I love you and thank you.
Well, I'm so grateful to even be with you. Are you kidding?
You're thank awesome. What are you most thankful for, Chris?
I am most thankful for the time I've had with my family and our new dog in the last 4 months.
Big dog.
A very big dog. She hasn't even barked this whole time, which is amazing. Yeah.
That's awesome. It's great. Good.
Hashtag thanks Corona.
Hashtag thanks Corona. Absolutely. I haven't met many people who travel as much as I used to. And so for those of us who are up in the air for many years, we have a cadence and understanding and camaraderie. So yeah. I concur with that. Love it. Enjoy your family, Chris, in the season. Let me ask you a part B to that then. If it ever opens up again that you'd go up in the air as much as you did, would you ever go back to the pace that you were away from your family if you had a chance?
I don't think so. It wouldn't be the same way. It wouldn't be the Good. Same. Yeah, no. And not just for them. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of in a new routine right now and I like it.
Yeah. Me too. I love it. Second question. What was your biggest obstacle that brought around your largest opportunity or a big obstacle that brought a huge opportunity?
In my whole life.
Yeah, you can choose anything.
Ever. You know, I think that the last recession for everyone was bad. I don't want another one, but I will say that it forced us to rethink a whole bunch of things. And so we came out of the last recession stronger and better than we'd ever been before. And sometimes I think that's hard to see when you're in the front end or like we are right now with lots of fear and of course, no business development and sales happening. So I'm looking and kind of going, whoa, what's going to happen in 2021? But because I lived through that recession and it was so hard on our industry in particular, you know, there's a part of me kind of going, oh, well, then I better think about innovation now because I know what it's like on the other side.
Love it. Love it. And lastly, Chris, what's your final encouraging word to anybody listening or watching right now?
I would say that right now for everyone, I hope that you can, you know, find yourself right now. You know, there's a lot of energy, it feels like, on social and my interactions with people, and I'm hearing from other people, they're having this similar thing, right? Where people are divided, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. We've got racial issues floating around that are very real and deserve attention. We also have our presidential election. You know, there's just all these stressors. And so I think it's really easy to get caught in those stressors and identify with them so much that we forget that, you know, the other thing available to us right now is to, you know, you're undistracted, right? Like, you could actually rest right now, most people. Like, you could rest, you could fish, you could spend 40 minutes talking to your neighbor. You could spend more time playing games with your kids. I've been binge watching Vampire Diaries with my daughter. Not my pick, but I gotta tell you, it's opened a dialogue between the two of us that we haven't had in a long time, right? Even though Vampire Diaries, the guys are cute. But yeah, so I would look, my thing is, whoever's watching, if you're having some real down moments, you know, sit in that, but also you really find yourself in it. Really find yourself in it. Like, what am I doing? Why do I feel like this? What do I have? Use some of your practices, Nick, around not just gratitude, but, you know, some deep knowing about how to take yourself into what's next.
Chris, I love you, and thank you so much for joining me today. This was fun.
Yeah, I love you too. Thanks for having me. I
love doing life with you. And the coolest thing is that we're both very young. We have many years ahead, God willing. And I just want to say thank you for being there for me and being a good friend. And God bless you and your family and RE Consulting. And please give my love to the whole team.
Thank you. You too. I'll talk to you soon.
Everyone. Yeah, I love you so much. Everyone, make sure you comment below. I'm going to get you to answer a yes if you agree with this. Should Christine Grimm finally write her first book? Comment yes below. And I think she should. She needs to. And I'm going to poke her there at the end. I just want to tell you all, we love you. And thank you for listening or watching to the Nick Vujicic podcast. We'll see you next week.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.